Before we begin, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the Infinitely Compassionate One, the Sublime One, the Revealer of the Truths, the Voyager, the Tathagata, the Supreme Buddha. To do so, let's take a few moments to recite Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
How has everyone's week been? I think that's a question that we keep on coming back to, right? How is our week? And I think it's really important to actually take a moment to reflect on that. Because hours pass, days pass, weeks pass, months pass, years pass. Sometimes you look one way or the other and, you know, a decade has gone by. And we don't realize that, you know, this is our time. Time that we have as humans. That's going by. Have you never experienced a time where, you know, you're in bed, you look at the time, you blink once and you know, several half an hour, an hour's gone by. All you did was blink and an hour's passed. An hour is just an hour, right? It is just an hour, but it's the most precious hour. An hour that we could have spent doing something useful. This is why every time we come back to the question, how was your week? So we can think about, was my week something that I'm happy with? Did I do what I wanted to do in this week? Or did I spend more time doing things that I deem to be unnecessary? I deem to be useless? Or I deem to be, you know, to be something that I did just for, you know, a very temporary relief. So today I wanted to, so last week we had a discussion about social media and young children. We had some videos that I really wanted to show our audience last week, but we weren't able to. But I do have them ready today. But I can't show those videos without any context. So I will give you a bit of context of these videos and I'll show these videos. So something that we are very aware of is we as humans are coming to, you know, we've been improving our technology, right? You know, several centuries, several millennia ago, we invented the wheel. The wheel was one of the most important inventions of time. Right? Without the wheel, we wouldn't be where we are today. Right? Wheels gave rise to cars and carts and horse-drawn carts. And then we got pulleys and all these amazing inventions, making human life to be easier. But we've come to a point where we are developing and we're evolving so fast that we don't know where, we can't see a clear future. So for example, something that you probably hear a lot nowadays. I don't hear much of, but I know that you may hear a lot of. And that's the rise of the AI. Right? Will it be destruction of humanity or will it be life-changing? So again, because we can't see a clear path, a clear future. Because it's come to a point where, you know, what's going to happen, where are we going to go, we don't know. But the most devastating, I won't call it devastating because it's not really devastating if used correctly. But something that what we see to be something that makes a massive impact on each and every one of our lives is a rectangle that belongs in your pocket. Your devices, your mobile devices. And especially, not just the mobile devices, but the apps on these. Now, so last week, we were talking about how now at a very young age, young children have been exposed to technology. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It never was a bad thing. However, what we don't see is sometimes we are blind to the impact it has on themselves. Now, something that I think we all used to think about is how innocent children are. You know, when we see a young child, a young baby, the first thought that we think is what? Ah, oh, they're so innocent. They don't know anything about the world. And people would say, you know, they're like angels. But something that we have to realize is, a baby is a being that has a body and that has a mind. Now, something that we explored last week is how the body is something that our mind uses to do its daily tasks. For example, our body helps us to what? Helps the mind see, hear, smell, taste, touch, to feel. That's the purpose of the body. Whether you're a 2-year-old, whether you're an 80-year-old, the purpose of the body is that. You eat food to sustain the body. Same as a 2-year-old. Same as a 1-year-old. Same as a newly born child. They will have to consume food to sustain the body. So the body can do what? See, hear, smell, taste, touch. So the body's main function is that. So for a 2-year-old let's take an 8 and 80-year-old. Difference in their body will be different. For example, the younger you are, the more taste buds you have. That's why children really don't like really spicy or really salty or really extreme tastes. Like that, for example, that's why some parents, too, when their young children are very curious, right? So I know this as I remember one of my friends had explained this to me, and they were explaining that, you know, when they were younger, whenever they, you know, their parents got together, right, that they would have say some sort of alcoholic drink. Now, as a young child, this young child was always really curious. Dad and mom and all these parents are all having this drink. What does it taste like? And one day, his father had actually given him some. And I remember for as long as I knew him, he rejected anything that had anything to do with it. Because their tongues are so sensitive that they automatically are repulsed. So body-wise, there are differences. Again, sight. I can't say all young children see very well because they don't. But when you are younger, your eyesight was, of course, better. And that's why you see, as you grow older, normally people have to wear glasses. Yeah, you have reading glasses and you have other glasses. So because your eyesight degrades as you grow older. Hearing as well. So as we grow older, our senses start to degrade, but still, our bodies use for the same thing. And then there's the mind. How different is the mind of an 8-year-old than a mind to an 80-year-old? What is the difference? Because if you really think about it, it looks as though, you know, a mind of a 2-year-old or an 8-year-old and a mind of an 80-year-old, they are so different. They're worlds apart. You know, this 2-year-old or this 8-year-old doesn't have much experience of life, and therefore they're enjoying, they're playing and doing whatever they want to do. As an 8-year-old, now, you know, they've retired, done a lot of work, had lots of experience, have lived a long life, and therefore they behave differently. But when it comes to the mind is something that arises and passes away at this moment. The mind is used, or the mind is a tool that uses an external stimuli. So the body gives a stimulus, right? Sight, sound, smell, taste. And the mind interprets this and gives an output. These are very simple ways of looking at the body and the mind. The body gives the stimulus, and the mind interprets, because we need to know what's going on. So, for a 2-year-old, same thing. For an 8-year-old, same thing. For any point in between, same thing. For you, for me, for anyone, we have the same process. Stimulus comes together, right? So eye and sight comes together, and the seeing mind is arisen. So we can see. Now, this is really interesting. Why? Because anger is something that's a byproduct of a mind. A mind with ignorance and attachment. How often do we see, you know, how often do we think about children having extreme anger? We don't really think about it. We think, you know, as children, we know through experience, as children, whenever we had a fight with our friends, the next day it was over. Next day you say, I'm sorry. They say, I'm sorry. And then you become friends again. So we normally come to think that, you know, as young children, we don't get really angry. But I beg to differ. Young children also become extremely angry. How angry? Angry enough that it looks as though they would like to strangle and literally take the life of the person who disturbed them. I do have a video of this, right? And it's a child. So I'll show you the video. I think, do we have the video? So it's of a child. And I want you to look at how angry this child gets and compare it to road rage. You know, rage that you see on the roads. I want you to tell me the difference. Can we have our first video, please? Oh, don't worry, they're very short, right? So it won't take much of your time. And the other one, can we see that video one more time? It's too short. We have to take some moment to comprehend this. Go on. Just look at the face of the child. Now, as a third party, right, as not the parent or the child is himself, it looks a bit funny, right? You know, the child is really angry. Ah. But in reality, what is going on in that child's mind? What is going on in that child's mind? At that very moment, if this child was to pass away, where would they end up? Because at that moment, anger doesn't have an age. That is the same anger that people feel when they, you know, when they're stuck in traffic or someone has done something in a car, you know, road rage, same anger. Because anger isn't something that can be differentiated by age. Oh, this is a 2-year-old anger. This is a 20-year-old anger. This is a 40-year-old anger. This is a 100-year-old anger. Anger cannot be differentiated by age. Anger is something the mind feels. Now, the problem with that is what? This child doesn't know. This child doesn't know what to do. And especially, I think last week we also explained how nowadays that because of technology and because of this instant relief they get, more and more children are finding to have shorter and shorter temper. It's very easy to now irritate children. All you have to do is when they're on their device, just give them a poke, right? Or you saw the first video, right? Just like, no, just touch the tab. And that's enough to make them go, make them angry. It is the same thing, whether you're a child or whether you're an adult. Just like if someone was to take something of yours, very simply, right? You may not get the same anger level as this child, but let's say someone is going to take something of yours, something that you love very dearly. What do you feel? I mean, very simply. Let's say some of you decide to go to the toilet. You come back and your seat's taken. Even at that moment, don't we have that slight, that's my seat. That's my seat. How can they be sitting on my seat? Even though technically that seat doesn't belong to you in the first place, you just decide to sit there out of choice. Someone else sits in it and automatically you feel this slight anger. Slight anger now. But let's say you paid, we went to, to listen to a very expensive motivational speaker. Or let's say you went to a concert, paid a lot of money to listen to get a front row seat, and someone's taken it. Now you see that anger start to arise. Whether you're a child, whether you're an adult, it doesn't matter. The only benefit there is of being more experienced is that you know once you're angry, don't do anything. One thing that I remember some of my teachers had given me advice, and it's something that I've held very dearly. And I'd like to share with all of you because it's something that's really interesting. And not only interesting, it's essential, I think. Never, I repeat, never make a decision. Make a decision when you are feeling angry or stressed. Never make a decision. Why? Because when you're angry or stressed, or when you're feeling this large, overwhelming amount of feelings, right? What we're looking at is we're looking for the simplest way out, the easiest way out. Now, is it easier to talk, or is it easier to use physical means? I mean, for the child, couldn't the child have said, "Mom, I'm playing a game here," or "Dad, can you not pinch me?" Very easy to, you know, it's easy to say, but it's even easier to use physical force. It's easier than, I think the best example is, so we all know that, you know, harming other beings is bad. We know that, right? Harming other people and other animals is bad. But if you take the example of mosquitoes don't count, right? They don't count as beings. They're parasites. They're people. They're beings that shouldn't be here. They're animals that shouldn't be here. But if you took a mosquito, Now, the good and humane thing to do is if you see a mosquito, like, taking your blood, right, the most humane thing to do is to blow it away or to slowly wipe it away. However, what happens after you blow it away? It goes round and comes and bites another place. So not only do you have not just one bite, but you have two bites now, right? Two witchy places. But now it bites you again. So isn't the easiest option to not even look at it and just go, easiest option. Because when you're frustrated, when you're annoyed, you're always looking for the easiest way out. Not always the best. That's why whenever you are angry, whether you're annoyed or whether you're feeling an overwhelming amount of emotion, never make a decision. Because that decision is not the right one. You've not thought it through. And decisions that are not thought through brings a lot of regret, a lot of guilt. So again, why do we feel this? Or why did that child feel this? Because this child doesn't know why he or she is angry. They don't know why they're angry. They don't know where anger came from. They think that anger came from what? This person, mother, father. As in that moment, if this child was, if they had the power, they would have gone, without a second of a doubt, done something terrible to their parents. All because of a tablet. Now, again, I'm not against tablets. I'm not against social media. I'm not against games. What I am against is people not understanding, whether it's an adult, whether it's a child, but not understanding why they are feeling what they're feeling. Now, something else that we talked about last week, and I want to revisit this week as well, right, to show another video, of course, is that it's come to a point where parents are finding, they're finding it very hard to control their children. Right, and I don't know if you see this often, but I know as a fact that that young children will throw tantrums, more and more tantrums, in very public places, right, screaming and shouting, and all of these things. Now, when this happens, they don't realize that, who they are talking to. Now, the two most important people in our lives is who? Our parents. Whether you are newly born or whether you're on your deathbed, still the two most important people in your life is your parents. I think that one of the greatest analogies that one of my teachers had given me is that, a ladder. A ladder has two straight poles. Yes, there are smaller ones that help you climb up, but which one is your foundation? Which one is it that helps you keep on going up? Those two straight ones. Those two straight ones are your parents. They're the two people who have directed you to where you are going. Now you can say, well, I am now X years old, right? I'm now, my parents, they've passed away, but their effect is still there. The effect they've made is still there. This is why they are incredibly important and very, very, they are the two most greatest people in our lives, no matter who they are. Now, talking back to them, shouting at them, screaming at them, is not only a bad thing, but it brings on this feeling that, they're no longer important. They're no longer people that I have to respect. They're just now two ordinary beings. And so, you know, now, and I think, see, again, let me reemphasize that I'm not against any of this. I'm not against technology. I'm not against social media. I'm not against any of these. But what I am against is, you know, when people don't know what they're doing. People don't feel, they don't really realize the extent of what their actions are becoming. So I have another video of a child throwing a tantrum. When the mother had asked, you know, I'm going to take your iPad away from you. Right, and I want you to see what this how this child responds. It's very interesting. Again, as a third party, it's quite funny, right? But I would like you to also realize the seriousness of the situation. Can I have the video with the child? And can I have the audio as well for that? No audio? Okay. I think the subtitles, I don't know. Okay. We are having some technical issues. That's fine. It's fine. We'll be hopefully be able to have the rest of the videos as well. So I'll explain the video. So I hope, because you won't hear it, but you'll still understand what this child is saying. So this child has been threatened. See, nowadays, you know, back then, back in our past, how our parents threatened us would be, you know, you're not going to go outside. You're not going to go with friends, right? Or if you don't do this, you have to do this. Nowadays it's very simple. It's the most easiest way to punish a child is saying, I'm going to take your phone, or I'm going to take your iPad away from you. Very easy. And so this has become, the iPad has become something that has become a strong foundation in a child. That they must have it. So this child, when the mother had threatened the child, this child says, very simply, three words. I dare you. I dare you. I dare you to come and take my iPad. And so the mother, very surprised, right, says, so you think I can't take it away from you? Right? Come closer. I dare you to take my iPad. Do we have it? Do we have the audio? No? It's fine. We'll have the video instead.
What? What's gonna happen?
I dare you.
What's gonna happen?
I dare you.
Come here one more time.
What?
I dare you.
What's gonna happen?
I dare you.
What's gonna happen?
I dare you.
Children are angels. Right. Again, I'm not against children, right? Because we all are children. Right. I'm the opposite. I love children, right? Because they are the most, they are children. Children are people, they are children who are able to change. They're like clay. According to their environment, you can mold them to be whoever they want. I think there was a very famous psychologist who said, you know, bring me any child and I can make them, you know, scientists, engineers, doctors, dancers. If you want, I can even make them thieves. According to their environment. By changing their environment, I can do this. I can help children do that. And this is why children are, it's really, really key, essential almost, that children have the environment where they're able to improve themselves. Now what we have to realize is why these children are becoming more and more aggressive is because they're getting used to more and more instant relief. I don't have the video, but I did want to show you was some children shows on YouTube, right? I won't give any names, right, because we don't want to do that, but these children shows that, you know, parents have become so used to put it on and let children watch. Something that you really see is, so whenever you get a chance, let's do this, right? Whenever you get a chance and you're on YouTube and you look at and you stumble across a video directed to children, count how many seconds it takes for the scene to change. Surprisingly, the scene will always change with maximum 4 seconds. Every 4 seconds, the scene changes. Every 4 seconds, the scene changes. I wish I had an example to show you, because we could count. You can count and go 1, 2, 3, and it's changed. 1, 2, 3, and it's changed. 1, 2, it's changed. 1's changed. It changes so rapidly. Why? Why? Because the entire purpose of these videos is, of course, to give something to the child to watch. But more importantly, is to get something that can draw the attention of the child. Keep their attention stuck on this video. Now, of course, because they get some monetary benefits. But so they make it so it's stuck. They're stuck on this video. Because remember, a mind is a mind. A mind, when it feels any sort of pressure, or any sort of mental vexation, once it's relieved, it feels what? Pleasure. Every 3 seconds, this child is now feeling what? Pleasure. So now the pressure or this vexation can only grow in 3 seconds. Meaning the patience of the child has gone down to what? 3 seconds. This is why now teachers are finding it incredibly difficult to teach children. There are many teachers that are very vocal about how the children are becoming more and more, their attentions are so small, so short, that they're finding incredibly hard to teach. So they have to, you know, find very, very smart ways to give messages to children. Whether it's, you know, singing and dancing and doing whatever, and they're trying to keep up with 3 seconds. Now, I don't know about you, but what can you teach in 3 seconds? 1 + 1 = 2. How can you teach that in 3 seconds? Now, I am, it's not just 3 seconds. So children they have longer attention spans, but it's reducing rapidly. And now because of this 3 seconds, 3, 4 seconds, their patience has lowered. Because their patience is lowered, now they cannot bear the mental vexation they feel. Always looking for what? The relief. Now, what do you call a person that is always looking for relief? Always looking for relief. Always looking, always, well, is dependent on something to give them a relief. What do you call those sort of people? They call it addicts. So what does that mean? Children are? Unfortunately, it's come to the point where children as well. They're not addicted to drugs, don't worry. But they're addicted to instant pleasure. Well, so are we all. But their patience has reduced substantially. Not only that, there have been several studies done, and what they have realized is children are becoming less and less. The literacy rate of children have reduced. Where children used to, you know, growing up, we used to sing, you know, nursery rhymes. Now children, they don't sing, they just watch. They just watch. Because these videos, again, these videos are really good. Because what you have to realize is, parents have the most horrible time, you know, when a child is growing up, they have to look after this child. And not only that, this child is you know, it's a crying machine. It eats, it cries. It sleeps, it cries. It walks, it cries. right? It makes sounds and then it cries. It's a crying machine. And so the parents will find some way to stop this child from crying. So it's a very easy, the most easiest thing to do is to turn on a device and just put a video on. Now, it's come to a point where, you know, parents have to find the most interesting ways to keep that child entertained. So we saw a glimpse of one of them. Where they have to find some way to keep the child interested. So when they're going out in public, what does a child always have in their hands? Unfortunately. I think there was a study done back, I think, a couple of years actually, to see how many children, at what age can children unlock phones? Can we have a guess? What do you think? Guess. At five. A five-year-old can unlock a phone. I think there's a study, in the study they found that even, you know, children that still are unable to walk, you know, in hand, you hand them a phone and they can unlock this phone. So one and a half, 2 years old. So now they're finding, you know, parents have to keep up with this now demand for instant pleasure. So even when they're going out in public, when parents used to go and show sights, right, going like, oh, look, there's a duck there. Look, that's a duck. Now they can only give them a device and say, look, it's a device. Look at video. Video is good. Can we have the video on the stroller?
This is how my sister gets my nephew to behave in public. She clips her phone to his stroller. Will this make him an iPad kid?
So what are children now used to? Whatever, however, from dawn to dusk. Now, again, I'm not against anything here. I want to rephrase this. I'm not against anything here. This is just a couple examples, just a few examples of behaviors of children. I'm not saying all children like this. Children are amazing, right? Just make sure that's clear. Children are amazing, but this is what's happening. More and more, we're seeing more and more children like this, and it's not so good. And you saw the other video, which is, even simple games are no longer entertaining. Now, this is an extreme example, but what you have realized is, I remember some children coming up to me, and they're explaining to me this double screen videos. Now, those of you who spend a lot of time online, right, will know that some videos, they have split screens. On the top is the actual video. On the bottom, they have just a random video. A completely random video of maybe of someone playing a game, or of people just making something, arts and craft. The top video is the one that they want to show, but they have a bottom one. Why is that? In case you get bored of this, watch this. When you get bored of this, watch this. To keep the attention on this. So can we have that video? Of the child with the two screens. Same principle applies here. This young child is playing a game while scrolling on some sort of social media. Again, extreme example, I do agree, right? I don't think all children like this, but this is a child. Again, please.
He's just always in his own world. He really quiet for real unless he know you. He's funny as hell though, but if he know you type shit, you know what I'm saying? Like,
now, I don't want any of you to think that, you know, if you know, I can parent children better than these parents. No. What we have to understand is this is what's happening. What I want to do is not to, I don't know, like to like show you how bad parenting is. No, I'm not here to say that, you know, parents don't know how to parent anymore. No, parents are doing their, trying their very best. But no matter how hard they try, they have to keep with society. If one child does it, every child has to do it. So last week we also talked about some trends and whatnot, but I don't want to go into that topic today. But I do really want to open your eyes to show you that this is what's happening. Right, this is what's happening. I think the 2024, the word of the year, if I remember correctly, is brain rot. The word of the year in 2024 is the word brain rot. It makes sense. It makes sense. Brain rot is an umbrella term for everything that's happening with media. So that's brain rot for you. So parents, if you don't know, that's brain rot. So I really wanted to open your eyes and show you what is happening, right? Again, I'm not against any of this. Because what we have to realize is these tablets can be used for good things. Children are learning faster. And there they are, they have, you know, growing up, some of us may not have ever been able to do a science experiment. Now they can see science experiments on their tabs, right? They have access to more and more materials and whatnot. And so it's not a bad thing. It's just that when we don't know what's happening, this is what happens. Because no matter who we are all looking for this instant relief. We are all looking for some sort of relief. Day-to-day life isn't we. Why do we always want to say, why did humanity make fast food or invent fast food? Because what don't we like doing? Waiting. Why do we invent fast delivery? You know, one day delivery, right? You order it that day, that afternoon it comes. Why do we have some of these sort of things? Because what do we not like doing? We don't like waiting. We like this feeling of instant relief. We want to be relieved at this very moment. This is why, you know, people want to be born in the heavens. Why? Because we don't like what? We don't like what? Waiting. We want to be think, okay, I want a house. And we want the house to appear in front of us. You know, I want to eat food. Or I want to eat mangoes. And you want mangoes to be not only mangoes, but the mangoes have to be cut and you know, the peel has to be removed and already in front of you. That's what we want. We want this instant relief because that's what gives us this so-called pleasure. This pleasure that we're looking for, that's what we're looking, that is from this instant relief. Because what we have to understand is how the mind works. How the mind works. Because if we don't know how the mind works, we're trying to you know, live and experience life without knowing how our tool works. And so when our tool gives us error codes, what are error codes of the mind? Anger is an error code of the mind. We don't like being angry, but we can't stop being angry. This is our mind saying, oh, there's something wrong with me. Help me. But we've come to realize that anger is just a normal part of life. But anger is an error code that the mind is showing. Stress, frustration, fear. These are all error codes that the mind is feeling. And so we think, okay, these are just error codes. This is just part of life. And we've come to just accept it as life. But these are error codes that the mind is showing because we don't know how the mind works. Once you understand how the mind works, you understand where these error codes come from. And not only that, you know how to get rid of the error codes. Stop these error codes. let's explore how the mind works. So we talked about how the body is something that gives us our senses. Now we have five senses, right? As little children, we've learned five senses, which is sight, sound, smells, taste, and touch. Right? These are the things that our body can supply. What else can the body make us feel? Pain, which is also what? Physical sensation. Now, just because there's a body, is the body alive? Just because there's a body, is the body alive? If so, the symmetry is filled with what? Living bodies. No, just because there's a body, you can't say that something is alive. The way we define something to be alive, in science at least, we define something being alive is by if it moves, if it's sensitive to the external world. I know, growing up we learn about what is it called? It's called Mrs. Nerg, right? Movement, respiration, sensitivity, and nutrition and whatnot. And these are the basic factors of something that's alive. In other words, the way we define something to be alive is that it's able to recognize, understand the external stimulus and know what to do with it. So for example, so let's take an example, right? So the mind is, let's say the body, the eye is seeing a flower. Just because the eye is seeing a flower, does that mean we are seeing it? A very good example is when you daydream. You're staring off at the distance, but you're not actually interpreting what's going on in the distance. What are you thinking of? Today I'm gonna go home, and you know there's that movie that I have to watch. The movie with my favorite actor, right? You know, it's gonna be a good movie. And now you're daydreaming, even though you're looking in the distance. Your eye is seeing, but your mind isn't interpreting. So technically, you're not seeing. So even though the eye and something, an object is in contact, you also need what? You also need what? You also... we got eye and object. Is that enough to see? No, we need the eye, the object. And for now, we'll call it the mind, but it's the seeing mind. The eye, the object, mind. Is this the only things we need to see? Is this the only things we need to see? What else do we need to see? What else do we need? What else do we need to see? Okay. I have an eye here, right? I have an object. And we have a mind. Can we see? What else do we need? There you go. We got lights. What else do we need? Just because you have an eye, what else do you need? Nerves. What else do you need? What else? Eyes, nerves. Brain, you know, if you're brainless, you can't see. What else do you need? See, there are 101 things, 101 things that you need to see. When all of these things come together, we say what? I can see. So what did the eye actually do? What did you do? Did you eye? Did you nerve? Did you brain? Have you heard the term the brain is not braining? Did you brain? Did you light? See, even those are like grammatically incorrect. But we say, I saw. Okay. Now, the object. Right. What do we do? What do we do with the object? To see, what do we do with the object? Do we do anything with the object? But then why do we say, I see? Oh, I saw that. You know, the other day, I saw a person fly and fall into ground. What did you do? Not only this, there's one other part that we can't see. That's not physical. What's that? You know, the moment I draw one line, you know what it is. You need your vipaka. Vipaka, in a sense, is energy to put these all together. Because anyway, these are all there. This is all there. The mind or the mind base is always there. But there needs to be an energy that is, that needs, that has to put them all together for the mind to think or for the mind to see. Now, this part, all of this part, we call that in Pali, Rupa. Now, the moment we have Rupa, now the mind is seeing, or the mind has an imprint of sight. Just because the mind has an imprint doesn't mean you can you understand. For example, what is this? Just because you have an imprint doesn't mean the mind knows. Because now the mind has to, now the mind has to realize or tries to find out what this is. No, I have no idea what this is. But you know, already you already have an idea of what this is. Like, tell me what do you think of my artwork? What is this? Is it a person? Is it a clock? What is it? Already you've already identified it. You've already identified it, and you said, okay, this is this. And trust me, all I did was draw a circle and two lines, and you've already identified what this is. I had no idea of what I wanted to draw, but you've already identified it, because what does the mind also do? It identifies. Identifies with what? So in Pali, we call that sanya. And that, and to be able to do that, it needs to use its memories. For example, an example that we've given before is, if you were to ask a child to draw a spoon, how would a child draw a spoon? So whenever you get a chance, ask a little toddler to draw a spoon. This is exactly how they draw spoons. That's a spoon. Then ask them to draw a balloon. How would they draw a balloon? Now, what you can never do is get it muddled up. If you get it muddled up, the child becomes sad. This is what? The balloon? No, this is the spoon. That is the balloon. They are identical. But due to our, you can say, memories, we've identified what it is. We know what we can do with it. So for example, you know that you can erase this. You can say, oh my God, that's a terrible drawing. Let me erase that. And you know you can erase that. So you know what you can do with it. And eventually, the mind perceives. So we're talking about a simple, a very simple process, right, of how the mind works. So the mind first receives and registers what's going on. Then it interprets what it is. And then it perceives. Once that happens, what happens? Once that happens, then what? Then R.I.P. Then what? The mind that had arisen, now what? Passes. That's why, you know, you can see this and then, you know, see this. You can see two things because one mind arises and you say, oh, it's a black whiteboard pen. And then the next mind arises and said, oh, it's a red whiteboard pen. Because the mind can receive, interpret, and now, again, this is very, very simplified. There are other things in between, we know, right? So, Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana, right? Very simply. It interprets and it perceives. And once it's done that, it passes away. Now, that is the purpose of the mind. For every single person, that is the same. When can we not perceive? When are we not perceiving? When you sleep, are you perceiving? Yeah. We are perceiving. We may not be perceived, so some people will have dreams. Some people may not have dreams, but yet the mind is still active in a different state, but it's still active. Still the same process happens. Still perceiving. That's why, you know, dreams, you dream, and, you know, you wake up from a dream. Have you never had a dream that seems so realistic that you can't differentiate if it actually happened or not? That's because you perceived it the same way. The only way you realize a dream is fake is because you wake up. If you don't wake up from a dream, well, it's for you at that time, it's real. Unless you have a lucid dream, which is different, but if you carry on, right? So let's write this again in a very simple way. So this is the energy that brings them all together, right? This is the energy that brings all the causes together for either seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and also thinking itself to happen. So that energy mixes with all the causes. You receive. You interpret. You perceive. Receive, interpret, perceive. Once that happens, the mind passes. Now that is fine. However, there is a process that's underlying all of this. Beneath the surface, there's a different process. And this process, it's what gives rise to all of our errors. Now, when I mean errors, I don't mean, you know, mistakes that we make. I mean errors as in every time we are sad, every time we're angry, every time we're frustrated, annoyed, any time where we feel all these negative emotions and some positive emotions is because of this. And let's take an example. Fear. Fear is something that we don't like. Now, you can say that everyone is scared of something. But that's not true. That's not true. Everyone is not scared of something. But let's take what people are scared of. I think the one thing that scares lots of people. So even if we had a survey, the majority of people would say they're scared of what? Do you know? What are people most scared of? What are most people scared of? Surprisingly, it's a dog. Why? Why are people scared of the dark? Why are grown human beings scared of the dark? But if you close your eyes, you can't see. Why? Why? What's so bad about the dark that makes us scared? Because who's in danger? Who's in danger? Will something happen to me? Is there someone there to hurt me? This is why, you know, you watch a horror film and of course you can't turn the lights off. Because why? You're now scared that if I turn the light off, will the ghost come after me? Because you are so focused on what's going to happen to me. What's going to happen to me? Now, where does that feeling come from? That feeling comes from, right? This feeling of what's going to happen to me comes from the feeling of me, right? Comes from this idea that there is something in this world that is special, that is unique. Because this feeling of me, this I, what does I actually do? What do you actually do? Do you see? Do you see? Can you see? Can you see? Can you not see? See, seeing happens. Hearing happens. Smelling happens. Tasting happens. We can't control what we see, hear, smell, taste, touch. Can we control what we think? Of course, I control what I think of. Of course I do, right? If so, don't think of pink elephants. There's no such thing as a pink elephant, so don't think of it. Every time I say pink elephant, what comes to your head? No matter how hard you try, every time you hear pink elephant, the image of a pink elephant will come into your head. It isn't real, but the mind fabricates a pink elephant. So what can the mind actually do? The mind can't do any of this. The mind can only perceive. So are you thinking or is thinking happening? This is why some people get really annoyed of some ideas they get. Because they feel that this is my idea. This is an idea that I have, but an idea just happens. Like, I know lots of people, they get really annoyed when they realize they're supposed to be doing something here. So for example, let's say someone is in need of help and you have the idea of not helping them and you get really frustrated after you don't do that because you think, why did I not help them? Because you thought that the idea of helping or the idea of not helping is whose? My idea. No, the idea just arose. The idea just happened. According to what? According to what? According to your environment. According to your according to how you interpreted it. According to your memories. According to that, would you make your decisions? For example, even if I asked you to give me a random number, is the number you gave actually random? Is the number that you gave actually random? I think this idea was a massive problem in the past, and it's such a great problem that they even made a movie about it. Right? They had dedicated a part of a movie about it, and I can't remember if the name is correct, but it's a very famous movie where there are con people, right? Con men and con women, who are trying to trick people into giving them money. And so they make a bet. Right? They want to bet on a player. And this person who they're against thinks that they're betting on a random player. On a random player. However, before that, the group of people have done so much to make sure that number was stuck in the guy's mind. Putting it everywhere, on posters, putting it on everywhere, on people, on things, on everything. So this idea that, you know, this is a random number is stuck in their head. And so when they say the number 76, it feels random, but is it random? If I ask to give me a random number, is the number you give actually random? Or is there some sort of process behind it? 3. Why do you say 3? Because I had, when I was coming to the monastery, I saw 3 cats. That's why I said 3. 5. Why? Because that's my favorite number. Why is it your favorite number? Because when I was 5 years old, I got a horse. I don't know. So again, there is some sort of reason. So what part of, what does me actually do? Me gives rise to what? Fear. Like, dark, we're scared of dark because we're scared what's going to happen in the dark. Will someone hurt me or will they scare me or harm me in any sort of way? The next most common phobia is, anyone know? I'll give you a clue. They live everywhere. No matter where you go, they're there. There you go. Arachnophobia. Why? I remember growing up, I think I had several friends who were scared of spiders. I didn't mind. Spiders were just animals for me. Or insects. So I used to ask them, like, well, why are you scared? Because they have 8 legs. You have 2 legs. Should I be scared of you? They say, no, but they have got many eyes. But that's not the reason why they're scared. What's actually scaring them? What's actually scaring them? Will they do something to me? Will they climb up my arm? Right? Will they, you know, bite me, sting me, or you know, somehow hurt me? That's how, you know, this is why in, you know, you can get, if people who have extreme amount of fear, the way that they come out of fear is by, you know, getting a spider in their hands and realizing the spider is not going to do anything to me. Then they're no longer scared. But the fear of spiders is because of what? What will happen? I remember I had a friend, I know someone who was scared of peacocks, birds. That one day, she was in a car and she was flocked by peacocks. The rest of her family were, you know, taking photos and saying, what luck we see, we're seeing hundreds of peacocks, you know, around our car. And she's screaming her head off because why? She was scared of what? What will happen? Then we have people scared of cockroaches. Very common. Right. That's why we all have, you know, spray ready. No, we don't have sprays anymore. But we're scared of cockroaches. Why? Because of the views that we have of them. We think that cockroaches, you know, they can fly. I remember there was one child that I was talking to, and I remember she didn't know that cockroaches can fly. Right? she was terrified of cockroaches, right? And then one person told her that cockroaches can fly, and she was like immobile. She couldn't move because she was scared that a cockroach would do something. Now, I think we have this idea that cockroaches are very, you know, very unclean animals, right? Therefore, they will poison our food, right? So, and they're terrible people, terrible animals, terrible insects. And they will do so much. Again, to who? To me. So you were scared of what? Me. What's going to happen to me? But actually, you know, cockroaches are actually very clean. I think there's a fact where a cockroach, when it comes into contact with a human, will go run and hide and clean itself. After, you know, just how when we touch an insect, we go clean our hands. When they touch a human, they go clean themselves as well. But yet we feel, oh, no. Cockroaches, bad. They're horrible. Be gone. Right? We don't want cockroaches. Because why? What's going to happen to what? Me. Now, a very interesting one is, you know, because, you know, the dark, something can actually happen. You can trip over something and something can actually happen. You know, spiders, there could be a very venomous spider that bites you, like, say, the black widow or, like, tarantula or whatnot. Birds, again, they could do some sort of harm. But, you know, there are some fears that have no real danger. But it's actually really all just mental. So another really common one is claustrophobia. Scared of small spaces. There is no danger. No imminent danger. But when they feel that they're in a closed, small space, they start being scared because they're like, what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen? This feeling of uncertainty, this uncertainty of what's going to happen to me, is what brings rise to fear. You know, have you ever like stared into a distance, you know, in a forest? And, you know, imagine you're in a forest at night. And, you know, people find it very hard when it's nighttime to look into a forest. Why? Because they're very scared of what they're going to find. So if they saw an animal start running, they become really scared. For what reason? What's going to happen to me? But instead of an animal, let's replace the animal with a teddy bear. A teddy bear's rolling down a hill. Will you be scared? Why not? Because you know that nothing's going to happen to what? I'm safe. So fear comes from this feeling of, what's going to happen to me? This uncertainty of, what's going to happen to me? That's where fear comes from. So what we have to understand is, where does this feeling come from? Where does this feeling of me come from? Because if I'm not the one seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, if this body is also just a process, where do I fit in this picture? I fit. Well, technically, I fit here. Ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of what's happening here. Ignorance of what is truly real. Because if we were to believe that this is real, now what our mind loves to do is to make what we want a reality by hook or by crook. This is why, you know, some people love sleeping. Why? Because when they sleep, they're able to dream about things they like. So I know young children who, rather than, you know, enjoying playing with other friends or whatnot, they rather go back and just sleep. And I know adults, right? Whenever you're not working, where are you? Sleeping. Enjoying not just rest, but dreams. Because whenever your mind wants something, it looks for a way out. So this has an ignorance of thinking of, I want this me. And because it feels that this me is something that's going to give it pleasure, it binds itself to the idea. To the idea that, that you know, this me, I want to be the I. It binds itself to this idea. But however, this world doesn't, there is no place in this world for I. Because what does I really do? What does I do? Just claim responsibility for things. So the process goes on, and the mind creates this feeling of self. Now, what we have to remember is the mind loves this feeling, likes this feeling. No matter who you are, no matter what you're doing, it likes this feeling of self. So, because of that, it's always looking for another one. The best example I can give is, when you go somewhere and the food is amazing, right? Let's say you go to a friend's place, right? You go to a friend's place, and they, you know, they've cooked the most amazing banana cake. I mean, the most amazing banana cake. What do you do? What do you do? What do you ask them? One, can I have some more? Okay. Two, can I pack some and take some home? But three, what else do you ask? You ask for a recipe. Why do you ask for the recipe? So I can make it again. So here, when it feels this, it thinks, okay, I like this. I want to make this again. So what does it do? It sends it back in a state so the mind can re-arise. The mind can re-arise. Now, this is very interesting. Why? It's because of this. So we're going to call it storage for now. Storing. But the Pali is bhava. Because of this, because of this storage, the mind is constantly taking whatever happens and storing it back. And this, and what it stores will differ from the effect it makes on the outside world. So when you do something good, this is why they say, what you give is what you get. When you do something good and positive, what you receive back is what? Good and positive. When you do something bad? So here's a question. How often do we take chance, our chances with all these energy, and how often do we send it back as in a very good form? In other words, how often do you spend helping one another, thinking good about another person? You know, doing so much for the benefit of someone else. How often? Or do you spend most of your time thinking about, you know, well, you're not thinking about good, but more thinking about the bad? If so, what are you filling this with? So, your bad vipaka, or the bad, see, it's not, see, the idea of good and bad is also very subjective. Because you can't say good and bad, because one good for me won't be the same good for you. For example, if you like apples, receiving apples, is that a good karma or bad karma? If you like apples, receiving apples, is that a good or bad karma? We can't say. Do you know why? You take a bite of the apple and you start choking. Is that a good or bad thing? But because you started choking, someone came and helped you. And after they helped you, they gave you the Dhamma. Is that a good or bad thing? We can't really talk about whether it's good or bad karma. But what we do, what we can talk about, or good and bad vipaka, but what we can talk about is the karma that we do. Whether the karma that we do, whether that's good or bad. Now, let's take this and join it with the videos. Right, the videos. Let's take a child. A child. One of the children on their iPads. They see, interpret, perceive, and they see a red square. They perceive a red square. That's fine. But what else happens beneath the surface? What happens beneath the surface? The child thinks, this, I like seeing this. I want to see more. So when the parent says, no more, you will not get to see this again. Now what? I can't see red square. I will do whatever I can to be able to see red square again. And therefore, I dare you. Come take my iPad, I dare you. Why? To see this so-called pleasure that they feel. To see this again, it does it. They'll do whatever they can. Take my iPad again, I dare you. See, you will see so many red squares, but you won't mind. But the moment I say you cannot see red squares again, now what? For example, you know, if I was to tell you from today onwards, you are not allowed to, say, spend more than 2 hours on a device, let's say. The moment you feel restricted, what do you feel? I want it. I really want it. That's why, you know, they say, if you should never think, or you should never have a resolution that you're not going to eat chocolate. You should never have that resolution. Why? Because when you say, I'm not going to eat this, you realize, oh, red square? I like red square. But if you were to say, you know, I'm going to reduce, reducing is okay. Because why? You still have red square, but less of it. But if you say, I'm going to stop, the mind goes, but I want it. I want red square. I want more of it. I want to have more of this. Please. So we are now falling into a trap. That is why these children are now so absorbed into their iPads, because they don't realize that this is because of that. It's because of the ignorance they have. Now you can say the child doesn't know their ignorance. Of course they don't. Not only children, adults themselves don't know their ignorance. They don't realize that they've fallen into the trap, the cycle. You see, this is the danger of the mind. It's a cycle. Can you not see the cycle? That's so dangerous. Because if you don't see the way out, you continuously go round and around and around in the cycle. What is another word for cycles, going round in cycles? Samsara. This is your samsaric journey. Although we say that samsara is life and death, no, samsara is a mind. The cycles of minds being so-called arising and then passing. Arising and then RIP, passing. That is the samsaric journey. That is what samsara is. Forget rebirth. This is the samsara that we have to stop. The samsara of... Because once you have this, Now you have fear, grief, stress, and all of these 11 great fires. All because of what? Technically, all because of what? The beauty of this is, the moment you see this, the moment you see this, you understand this, this starts to fade. Now, one thing that we should never do is, you know, say, and this is something that we're very used to, and that's looking for some sort of change, instant change. You cannot get instant change. Instant change is not something that's possible, because this cycle you've been going on over and over again, increasing ignorance since the beginning of technically time. Only now are we going backwards and getting rid of this. See, the only way you can actually measure how far you've gone on your journey is only when you look back. That's the only way you realize how far you've gone. When something bad has happened and you realize you are behaving differently, not in the same way. That's where you judge how far you've gone. For example, let's say you use a laptop. The laptop broke. Before the Dhamma, you would become really stressed, really, you know, you'll be really upset, and you're looking for, you know, you're ready to blame anyone and anyone that comes by. If you had a cat, the cat's to blame. If you had a dog, the dog's to blame. If you have a child, the child's to blame. It's because of this person that this laptop break. But now, after understanding Dhamma and you realizing not only this, but the anicca, dukkha, anatta nature of the world, now the laptop breaks and you think, oh, okay. The causes have changed. The effect has changed. What can I do now? With no stress, no strain, no frustration, that is how you measure how far you've gone in this journey. By measuring how much less suffering you feel, how much less dukkha you feel. That's how you measure. If you look for instant success, I'm going to do it once. Where is my benefit? You will not find it. These are so minuscule, however, have massive impact. Only once you go through and get rid of this slowly. See, right now, those of you who frequently listen to these, you know, to the Dhamma. If I told you, you know, you have a chance, right? You're gonna get, you've won the lottery. You're gonna get millions of dollars and a plane ticket to Hawaii. How many of you would be like, yes, finally, I'll be able to go to Hawaii? Or would you be like, ah, okay, I don't want it. What can I do with this? You know, why not give this to the, why not take the maximum benefit out of this and offer to and give it away? Because you know what you give is what you get. You're not giving just your, you understand, you realize that money, millions of dollars, means nothing. Happiness here means everything. So, all I did say, okay, we're taking 5 people to the moon, right? 5 people to the moon, to colonize the moon. How many of you would say, I would like to go? Or would you be, I'd rather stay and be with my Kalyana Mitras. Because if I go to the moon, this still happens. But I want to get rid of this first. See, that's the change in thoughts that we have. This is your journey. Once this disappears, Now the mind arises, the mind passes away with no stress, with no suffering, no fear, no grief. The mind arises, the mind passes. And one day, the mind base will disappear. And then, down comes the castle. Now you're left with what? This is your journey to Nibbana. It's such a profound journey. A journey that requires so much change. Change meaning nothing to change in your lifestyle, but to change the way you think. Instead of seeing the world as, you know, how can I get something, is what can I do for you? It's, this is something that I want, then to think this is cause and effect. This belongs to me, to think this is a feeling of belonging. It's such a profound journey that we have to take one step at a time. I'm aware of our time. We have Dakini here today, right? So we have to prepare for that. So something that I'd like to end off with is Dakini is one of the most advantages. Now, most of you who have been in the monastery so frequently, Dakini is just an event. But it's one of the most special times, because not every day would you be able to see hundreds of monks, anagarikas, coming to a single area. Because if you look around, this is the sasana. This is the Buddha's ministry. Very rarely do we get the chance to offer alms to them. Now, again, not everyone will be able to give alms. That's fine. Not everyone will be the opportunity to maybe wash an alms, but that's fine. Because it's not about what you do. It's about the mind. Because whether you do it physically or mentally, that strand just collects the energy. So I really do hope you take this to the absolute maximum. Right? The absolute maximum. Because think about the way I encourage lots of people to do it is to think about this as your last offering that you do ever. How would you do it? Always do it like that. This is my last offering. How would I do it? To what extent do I make this offering? So again, it's not a sight that we see very often. Although in our monastery, we see it every 2 weeks? 2 weeks? It's not a sight that we've seen very often in our samsaric journey. Remember, we only see it once every mind, right? Not very often. So do take this toad, do take the advantage and do the maximum you possibly can. Okay. Do we have any messages? No? No. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith Dhusan Dharma and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be received with these teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's chant for the merits of the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of noble lineage in form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend the number. Let's all take a moment to transfer the merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all the chaplains of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committing themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries who have always been by our side through thick and thin, come in or shine. Let's all take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Swaminarayan Nansi, as well as the monks resident in the monastery, as well as the anagarikas, anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be there by transmitting the sermon, shine them out to others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble foot path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits they required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who forsake our merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha or shelter, alms, or his medicines, as well as those who pass in their know-hows and their well wishes. May the power of merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble foot path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So the name of the merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, support us, assist us in any way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in spiritual progress, may they abstain from our meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble foot path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Exalting one chance of merits with devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primary psychodeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who have committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let's also take one chance of merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Exalting one chance of merits to our ancestors who predeceased us, who always been friends and friends to us. In this long journey in Sansara, let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the world be the defender for. Rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, and unseen pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them, we those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in Sansara. May the power of merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves being born in the blissful plain. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nivasis, Arhat Mahin Nivasis in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits required throughout the day, you and I and everyone who have made this program a success become an Arhat Nivasi or an Arhat Mahin Nivasi in his very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of the Chupa Jam be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer their blessing to you. Raga ginnin mitetnva dvesha ginnin mitetnva moha ginnin mitetnva nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Raga ghini niveva, dvesha ghini niveva, moha ghini niveva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva,
සැප ලැබේවා. තුන්වන්ගේ සුසියනන්ත මහා ගුණ බැලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සිය සත්‍යවම නිබ්බාන ප්‍රමසකින් සුඛතර වෙත්වා.